Cut it. Can we get rid of that? Cut it. Not a fan. Is that like fucking Diet Nickelback or something? Seriously, have we got something even more generic you can find to put people fucking sleep? Jesus. Look, let's cut the shit. 30-minute interviews released weekly. We're going to talk to some everyday Australian guys, ordinary blokes who have been through something extraordinary. It's going to be raw. It's going to be emotional. But hopefully you can go away with some tips and tricks, maybe some good habits that'll get you through your own rough patch of life. We're trying to break a stigma here. Blokes don't talk, so we're starting a conversation. Yeah, mate, no worries. Let's fucking go again. Outro music. Show us your picture, Chad. Good early evening, Lucky. How are you, sir?
Good, thanks, Braden. And yourself?
Yeah, cruising along, mate. Loving watching you rock out to my Diet Nickelback. I think I need to start to make a habit of asking this. Are you a Nickelback fan? Are you mortally offended by my joke?
Oh, well, I think if you're not a Nickelback fan, you're lying. So everyone is deep down, let's be honest.
For sure. What's the song about the dude making out with the girl in the car and her dad comes along, the Nickelback song? Is it Drive or something?
Sorry,
like
that? Sorry, mate, I'm not a Nickelback fan, I wouldn't know.
Shut the fuck up. Absolutely caught me there. Okay, so speaking to a very dear friend of mine, Lachlan Floyd, who know through various means, but I guess one of those peripheral people in my life that we're both very busy. We probably don't get to talk often enough, but I've always clicked with and had a tremendous amount of respect for. He probably thinks I'm a bit of a cockhead, but I'm going to stick by my story regardless. Let's set up a little bit of the story that is Lachie Floyd, man. Tell us about where you were born, where you grew up.
Yes, so I was born and bred and still live in Sale, Victoria. Been here all of my 26 years, bar a 6-month stint where I lived in England, but that was more of a travel to come back here anyway, so with that in mind. So yeah, Sale is where I've been my whole life.
Nothing wrong with Sale, mate. There's probably a list, but let's not indulge the list. So take us through your school, and man, let's keep it simple. Where did you go to primary and then secondary, and anything tertiary you've pursued thereafter?
So went to the 545 primary school in Sale, and my secondary school was at St. Pat's or Catholic College Sale. And I did my diploma through TAFE in East Gippsland.
Yeah, beautiful, man. Beautiful. So initial your own family structure, I guess a lot of people know most key members of your family, and I think anyone that knows you thinks you're the right mix of crazy and empathetic that your mum and dad represent. So take us through your family structure.
So we have mum and dad, and then there's my brother Jared, and then we have an additional 3 sisters and another brother, Hayley, Melissa, Sally, and another brother Mitchell. All the same dad, different mum.
And professionally, mate, tell us about your current gig.
Professionally, so at the moment I run my own business in disability care. My business name is Ohana Services.
Look it up on Facebook.
Across the name from, yeah, it's on Facebook, give it a like. Come across the name from Lilo and Stitch, the Disney movie, so that's where I got the name from.
Yep. And your background before that, I probably should have done that in chronological order, but how did you lead to taking that leap, mate, and going out on your own there?
So I did my traineeship at the South Special School when I was 19, and then landed the job at George Grey in Sale in Mafra. Worked there for 4 years, and yeah, just thought, I reckon I can do something a little bit like this myself and do it the way that I think it could be ran, or things I think could be done different.
What do just for people not from Gympie, mate, take us through what George Grey get up to?
So George Grey is a adult learning centre, very similar to what I do now. So for those people 18 years and older that are living with a disability, they support them.
And obviously, we're talking before we got rolling with the podcast about coronavirus and everything it's impacting, which you know, doing a lot of amazing work with groups in the community, it's affecting you. But prior to this and hopefully very shortly after, tell us about the sort of scope of the group activities you get up to out in the community.
Okay, yeah. So our group activities sort of are to assist the guys with their goals, I guess, in life, whether it be fitness, social, or any learnings. So we go out and we go to the gym and swimming pool on Mondays. Wednesdays, we have a 10-pin bowling team that we're currently actually winning the tournament. So go us. Thursdays, we teach the guys how to travel train. So use various community transportations, like, you know, train, bus, those sort of things. Alternating that, we have a cooking class at the Rosedale Footy Club, where we teach the guys to cook basic meals that they could do on their own. And Fridays is just our social day. So could be just a group of friends going to the movies or going and playing laser tag. We go around to different parts of Gippsland and just, you know, support the local businesses and just get out and about and have a bit of fun on a Friday. Good way to finish the week.
Yep, and how many crew do you, or at least did you have helping you with this when it's at full swing?
So how many staff members?
Yeah, mate. Yep.
At the moment, I think, what are we down to now? We've got five staff members working with us at the moment.
Yep. Fantastic. That's awesome, man. So hobbies growing up, and I guess hobbies now as an adult.
I guess hobbies growing up was anything sport, whether it be cricket, footy. I played a bit of netball in my primary years. Gave up each season of footy to play netball. Didn't really care what people thought. I just wanted to do it, so I did it. Yeah, just any sports, really. If it was outside and it was physical, I wanted to be a part of it. So,
who's the better cricket player out of you and the brother?
I'd have to say Jared, but yeah. I'd be kidding myself if I thought I was on his wavelength.
See, it's a confusing topic for me because the Facebook banter seems to imply that you're very, very capable, but then when I read the local papers each week, he seems to have done okay.
Yeah. No, he's very, very talented. I'll give him that.
So,
I wouldn't tell it to his face, though.
talk us through your footy umpiring as well, because I know it's a huge passion of yours and something you've done. You know, obviously with a hell of a lot of hard work, but you've excelled in that field pretty quickly as a result of your efforts.
Yeah, absolutely. I won't go into the full story because a lot of it will come out later as well, I think. But sort of started off as a 13-year-old kid, 12-year-old kid, just wanted to earn some pocket money running in the local boundary. By the time I was 14, I ran senior field locally, stayed here till I was about 22. Decided to work my backside off and trial for the VFL, where I was lucky enough to get on the list and have been down there now for this would be my fourth season down there.
Excellent, man. Excellent. And your own current relationship status and family structure, I guess, now that it's you as an adult?
Yep. I'm now taken to my beautiful partner, Crystal. And our family structure, she has a 2.5-year-old son, Kaysen, who joined me before.
Yes, yep.
So that's our little family at the moment. Yeah, pretty happy about it. Pretty instant family for me, though, so straight to the deep end.
Yeah, I think as life comes along, you step up to those unexpected gifts that present themselves, I guess, and it's my experience anyway, some of the best choices I've ever made weren't necessarily made by me. They were maybe made for me or where life took me. So it's certainly lovely to see you so happy whenever I get the chance to interact with you. And I think it's probably a reflection of that circumstance.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Yeah.
All right, man. We'll might take a quick break and then we'll get into a bit of the deeper stuff that make up Lachie Floyd.
Awesome.
And now, a word from our sponsor. Nah, just fucking with you guys. We're never going to monetize this. This is your resource. And blokes, this round's on me. As we move into the next section of this conversation, we're going to be asking some pretty real questions. We're going to take things a level deeper. It'll be raw, but hopefully we'll come up with some tips and techniques that might help some fellas out there get through a bit. If what we discussed today raises some emotions for you, either from something you've got through in the past or something you're currently dealing with, discuss it with someone in your life you trust. If someone isn't immediately available, or if you're quite anxious about the feelings that you uncover, call Lifeline Australia. They're available 24/7, they care, and they're very professional. 13 11 14. Alternately, have the chat with your GP. Discuss going on a mental health plan if you're having a rough time. There's no shame in it. Get a little bit of counselling. Get yourself travelling in the right direction. If the voice in our head gets a little bit negative, it doesn't magically get better. We need to introduce a professional. Someone who has a bit of rationality. Someone who has a bit of positivity. Somebody who can help us not just survive, but thrive. We need you, fellas, and we want to see the best of you.
That's far less painful to listen to than the intro for me. So there was less moments of cringe whenever that plays, because at least it's heartfelt. So obviously, as you've listened to with the other episodes, mate, we tend to deep end you, and you know, you. I think one of the reasons you and I get along so well is that you're obviously a very candid fella and wear your heart on your sleeve, which I absolutely respect. So I'm sure it not. Won't be over daunting for you compared to some of the people I've spoke to, but let's crack on, mate. What's the hardest thing that you've ever had to go through, Lachie?
I reckon the hardest thing, or the hardest patch of my life or period of my life, would be my early years in secondary school. I was in year 7. I used to have really bad anxiety, and something I used to call them panic attacks. I didn't know or understand why this was happening. But on top of that, there was, you know, the usual year 7 bullies. I used to encounter them quite regularly when I was going through this, and I didn't quite understand. I still probably don't understand why it happened at the time. But yeah, it was definitely the darkest time of my life. Didn't really want to go to school, and just living in constant fear, I guess, at the time when that next panic attack was coming.
It's pretty crazy, man. And considering how much I've put myself through the ringers with some quality decisions and some interactions with mental health along the journey, anxiety, funnily enough, isn't something that I've personally got a lot of experience in. I've certainly had some moments where I've felt that raw terror, panic, consumption that the world was closing in. But it's of the things I have had to deal with, something that I don't have a lot of personal experience with. So I guess for listeners, man, take us through what that's like as a experience, either, you know, having the broader condition or what it's like to go through an attack.
Okay, so for me, I don't remember all of my panic attacks, but I'll never forget my first severe one. I remember being in the shower one night, and just everything went all tingly. My chest hurt, my hands closed up, my feet curled over, and I honestly just felt like I was going to die. I was stiff as a board. Mum had to come in and help me out of the shower as a 13-year-old boy. That was, look back on it now, it's pretty funny, but not funny, but you know, I honestly thought that it was, everything was going to end. Like, I felt like that was it. I'm dying. And that was it. Yeah.
It's full on, man. And what was, you know, that period of your life, I guess, you know, the general anxiety of living within yourself, knowing that could potentially come on if you had the wrong stimulus. How much did it affect your broader life, your sleeping patterns, your interactions?
Oh, absolutely. I would say I definitely wasn't the person that I am today. I was very, very shy. Didn't really want to be known. I might come out of my shell every now and then and be over the top loud, but didn't really want to be in the spotlight. It was just something that I felt like I needed to do. Sleep patterns and things like that. Yeah. You're almost too scared to go to sleep, I guess. Like you could wake up during the night and have one. So there was a fear of waking up to a panic attack. There was, you know, there was just constant worries going on. You didn't know. The fact of not knowing was probably the scariest thing, I guess.
It's you know, pretty heavy something to be carrying around constantly, and certainly feel at the mercy of man. So, I know of the condition and what a panicked and fatiguing state it is, but what were some either specific tips that you got off a psychologist or a counsellor at the time, or even just positive life habits that helped you carry that burden a little bit better, I guess, and eventually overcome it?
This won't come to any surprise to you. Seems you know my mother. Mum used to go through the same thing as a kid, and I just remember her being so reassuring. She assured me she went through the exact same thing. She knew exactly what I was going through. And she was just with me every step of the way. I remember one day I was umpiring football, running the boundary. And Mum used to sit on the fence and watch. And I ran past her and I said, I'm about to have one. And I literally talked myself into this panic attack. And Mum was in her high heel boots running the boundary line with me, telling me, it's okay, it's okay. Like, out in the footy field running next to me the whole way. That's the sort of support I had from Mum. And, you know, she did things day in, day out just to sort of help me change my mental view of it all, and, you know, try to say, she'd go get me like special rocks and things like that to say, like, it's okay. She went above and beyond, and yeah. Anyone that knows who my mum is, no, that's exactly what she's like. So I guess I was very fortunate to have someone like her through that time, yeah, and through my life.
Yep. So once you were, obviously your mum's one of the more supportive humans I've ever met, but once you were progressing through being on top of that as a condition, what were some self-driven habits and hobbies, I guess, that helped you move away from that or control it if it did have a bit of an onset?
If I look now, so I still will get the odd one every now and then, but I know how to deal with it and I know that I'm okay. So I know how to deal with it, and I know I like to do things like go to the gym. That's one way I like to cope with it. Just staying busy, relaxing, laying down. I know what it is that I have to do, and I know I'm very aware of when I can have one, and I can assure myself that I'm okay. I've sort of taught myself, I guess, over these years to deal with it, and yeah.
Now, this next question is probably not applicable, mate, because I think it's really harsh to judge your 12, 13, 14-year-old self on anything much, but maybe as you've moved into adulthood and had the remnants you know, having that potential within you to be subject to anxiety, any habits or vices or anything that you've noticed definitely just don't help?
I couldn't answer that as a 13, 14-year-old, but looking at it as an adult, I guess Well, actually, no, I'd look at it from the 13, 14-year-old. I know that I could talk myself into panic attacks, I guess. You know, with the fear of it, I'd almost talk myself into having one so that I didn't have to wait for it to happen, which I don't think really helped the cause at all. So, yeah, that's probably one habit that I would tell a 13 or 14-year-old Lockie not to do, is talk yourself into having a panic attack, I guess.
It's a human mind's obviously fascinating, full stop, and I'm sure that other than, you know, the compassionate soul that you are, a big draw to your professional field for you is probably, you know, the broader topic of human psychology. But I find it kind of fascinating that the worst that we can be within ourselves is going in a bit of a negative loop within our own mind, but at the same time, very healthy things like going to a counsellor or going to a psychologist. Good counselling or good psychology is essentially someone listening long enough that we can unravel our own knots anyway. So it's crazy state of mind and a little bit of support, and the brain can be a very different place, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. Once you get into that negative downward spiral, that's it.
As you would have heard, mate, we try and take you on a bit of a roller coaster here to keep it raw. So we'll flip to the other end of the emotional scale. And what would you say is the best moment of your life?
I actually thought about this when I was listening to Corey's podcast the other night. I couldn't nail it down to one moment. I guess it was a series of moments over a couple of weeks of my life. But leading up to that was negative. So if I was to take you through the story, I handed in my resignation at George Grey. I was told to leave on the spot, which sucked. Then the list announcements coming out for footy. All my mates got promoted. I didn't. I stayed on the same list. And I sort of went away with it and still went about my business really positive. 2 weeks later, I started up. I had my first day being a business owner and running my own business. The next night, I went to training at the VFL, and I actually got promoted to that list that all my mates had been promoted to. So it was like, yeah, when it rains, it pours. But I reacted to it in such a – it's probably the proudest moment of my life is it wasn't what happened to me. It was how I reacted to it. I still went out. I was just like, you know, I'm going to be the best umpire on this list. And two, three weeks later, I got promoted, you know. I wasn't going to sit there and sulk over not getting to say goodbye to all the clients I worked with at George Grey. I worried about how am I going to get clients for myself. And all of a sudden, you know, I was running my own business and I got promoted to – my list, the two things that I really wanted 2 weeks earlier, and all of a sudden, you know, with that positive mindset, it was there. So I guess that was the proudest moments of my life.
It's funny, man. I'm not sure how much, you know, different people probably attribute to different things, whether it's their religious followings or just a general law of attraction or whatever it may be, but it's crazy how many people you talk to, and you and I both have similar experiences, that the best recognition, I guess, of efforts and skill set in their lives tends to come when they're not looking for it and they're just enjoying and striving to be proficient.
Absolutely, yeah. Just make the best of what you've got at the time. And if anything else comes, that's a bonus.
Yeah, very cool, man. Now just jump back off the cliff in the roller coaster that is Blokes Don't Talk. And what would you identify as being separate to the worst moment of your life, from a what you put out there perspective, what would you think is the worst that you've put out? What are you most embarrassed about? When did you least meet the Lockie bar, do you think?
I reckon in that those early, you know, after school years, I guess, where I was going out in the whole party scene, which is absolutely fine at that age, I guess, to some extent, in moderation, as we say. But I guess not reflecting my true beliefs and my morals, I guess, in, you know, not being a bully, I guess, but not treating people exactly the way I would like to treat people. And that's just to fit in with different sort of crowds and things like that. You know, I think of the times on the cricket field, like the slightest examples, you know, think of the times on the cricket field where I've said nasty things which don't need to be said. And that was probably that period of my life where I was a little bit unhappy with, you know, who I was as a person because I was, you know, overweight. I wasn't really happy. So, you know, I just wasn't being myself and that just didn't reflect who I am at all. And I guess anyone who knows me from that period and knows me now well enough would say they are completely two different people.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. It may well be the case, you know, most stages of history, but I feel like, you know, that the positive aspects of what the left influences have had on Western society during our lifetimes in terms of just improved expectations of how you treat other people, having to deal with that on top of going through the testosterone cycle of a male lifespan, I guess it's real easy to look at 5 years ago you or me or 10 years ago you or me and think that guy was a bit of a cockhead, but whether it's entirely fair or not, or whether it's just not true to the majority of guys, it's really hard to say, I think.
Yeah.
So, back in the positive mind frame, mate, what's the bravest you've ever been, do you think, or the most admirable? When did you really exceed Lockie's expectations?
That's actually pretty hard. This is actually really hard for me because some people think, you know, it's easy to blaze, like, talk yourself up and that might be some people might perceive me that way, but I actually find it very hard to actually pump up my own tires. So I reckon the bravest I've ever been, though, would be sticking up for my true beliefs, whether the majority went against it. So, you know, we talk about how I work in disability and, you know, I've had partners and friends who have, you know, referred to these people as retards. And we had a conversation before this. Now, I completely go against that word. And I don't care if you're my best mate or if you're, you know, a family member, if you say that word, I'll call you out on that. And so I think, you know, to do that in front of my larger group of friends was probably one of the bravest things to do, to just sort of go, hey, that's not acceptable and I'm happy to walk away, but that's my belief. Like, I'm not going to have this sort of scene here. So it's only something very little, but it's just, I guess it's very, yeah, that's just my core belief. So, yeah.
I think it's staunch as fuck, to be honest, man. I reckon, you know, the ensuing awkwardness of a situation like that, even if you have a really good understanding relationship with those people and that they might think, no, that was appropriately fair to call me on that, you know, there's still going to be fucking a handful of moments of awkwardness in that conversation, to stand up for what's right. You know, that's, for me, something very admirable. I aspire to get that balance right because I'm probably deeper into my life. I probably thought I was an introvert growing up, but I'm relatively adversary where opportunity presents. So making sure that I'm fighting the right battles, I guess, rather than being excited by the opportunity of a battle has definitely been a challenge with me in the last handful of years of my life. So, you know, I know that about you. That is something I'd identify as admirable and I don't think you should necessarily discount that. I think that's pretty good.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I'm the sort of person, I can't deal with confrontation at all. I just find it so awkward. So, yeah.
Something that I thought might have been your answer and now I'm going to have to ask you about because it's something I admire about you. So you talked before about not really getting to do a handover and a goodbye to clients, and it's not what you talked about, but having, you know, studied in healthcare, I understand why it would have been very hard for you to get marched once you'd resigned. What then gave you the bravery, and for me it's brave, it might have felt natural to you, but to not just jump back into that field, but to launch your own business?
So the idea was there, but I had a lot of people and for years asked me to start up my own business and to actually, you know, do something for this area. So it was just meant to be, I guess. And when that opportunity came, I was like, there's no way, no. I flirted with the idea for a couple of years and just was never brave enough to jump at it. And thanks to the support of my parents, who just said, look, what's the worst thing that can happen? If you fail, you fail. So what? So I just went, fuck this. I'm gonna have a red hot crack here. And, you know, it paid off. I think if you give everything 100%, what's the worst thing that can happen?
Yeah, no, it's I find it very, very impressive, and I'm privileged a little bit, I guess, to have some background in the field and similar fields, so I understand everything that you were dealing with in making that decision, rather than just being about leaping into business. So I certainly find it very admirable, mate. That's for sure. So who would you say is your hero, Lockie, or someone you admire the most?
Oh, I couldn't split between mum and dad, to be honest. I couldn't split them. I'd just have to say parents as a blanket answer to that. They've just, yeah, I can't think ill of them at all.
And
I wouldn't be the person I am without them, you know?
To be fair, mate, it's probably not that generic an answer. You do have, you are spoilt to have pretty impressive and caring parents. Both of them go above and beyond for the people in their lives, from everything I can tell.
Yeah, and I think that they've got that sort of yin and yang balance as well, where, yeah, you know, dad's the sort of, you know, your typical dad who will just do anything for you sort of thing, and mum just has that loving, caring nature that's just out of this world. Like, once you're in her circle, that's it. You know, you're going to know about it. You're going to be, she'll go out of her way to do anything for you, and you just, everyone who is surrounded by her and is close to her just feels nothing but love. That's pretty much her.
And just to clarify my earlier comments, because I think there's probably zero chance of Razor listening to this, and plenty of chance Jen will, that when I said equal parts crazy and empathetic, I was definitely talking about your mum being empathetic and caring, and your dad being straight out crazy.
He might disagree.
He can, but I think your mum will probably listen to this, so I don't want her to come after me. So that's all good, bro. So
yeah, I don't.
In terms of what you find admirable about your parents collectively, what of those characteristics do you aspire to specifically, and how do you think you're tracking in making them a part of, you know, your fabric?
So Dad asked me the same question probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago, you know, what are the core values, or what do you think of us as parents? And, you know, things like honesty, respectful, and just loving and caring are just the things that sort of jump out at me. They're so honest. Like, when we grew up, there was a saying, I don't care who burnt down the house, just tell me who lit the match. You know, so we were told never to lie. That was our biggest thing. Do not lie. We won't be too mad if, you know, we might be a bit upset, but we won't be mad. Just, we'll be angry though if you lie to us. So growing up, and that's something that's really come into my life, is, you know, just don't lie. Yeah, okay, you know, someone's going to be a bit upset. That sucks, yes, but lying hurts a lot more. So that would be the biggest value I've taken out of them. And how I'm tracking with that, I think it's sort of been, you know, bred into me to be that way. At times I'll avoid the conversation, but I wouldn't lie to you. I'd avoid the answer of the question, but I wouldn't lie to you.
I love it, man. So would you identify, stepping away from your influence and I guess more specifically spotlighting what makes up the standalone man that is Lockie Floyd, what would you say is your most admirable quality?
I think those who are close enough to me know that I would do just about anything for anyone. I'd go out of my way. I'd give you my last few dollars if I had to. It's just something, I feel like I'm very I can be very giving. So I feel like that would be probably my biggest quality.
And I agree that people in your life would certainly support that. But just to give some background from my own context, you know, no doubt would have reached out to you or potentially had with regards to me embarking on this project. But just for the listeners, I got a very lovely contact off Lockie after he'd listened to Jake's podcast, I believe, basically saying, this is fantastic, this is needed, how do I help? And I said, well, you know, like I was hoping we would anyway, let's have a yarn sometime and hopefully someone else can find some light in your honesty and maybe pick up a bit of what you've used to get through some challenging times, and we've kind of just been trying to make it happen since. So you know, in our broader interactions, you couldn't have been more available to me whenever I've needed it, but certainly you've been super supportive of this.
No stress at all. It's such a great initiative, buddy. I'll just interrupt you there. It's such a great initiative, and I think it is already starting to make conversations or make people aware to have these conversations. So good stuff.
It's funny, man. Like, obviously, a lot of people have reached out to me. I've had people go bypass, even if they are my friends, and reach out to the people that have already been published and say, you know, amazing story, I got something out of that, or you helped me through something or whatnot. It's kind of been a little bit of a wildfire already in that space. But the other thing that kind of surprised me, and it's an interesting topic that I'd love to explore further, probably with you if we chat again, but certainly with when I have some of the topic experts on, that I've had people reach out to me and ask if I'm doing okay, and what I would think that that's potentially in relation to is you know, me putting so much energy into this project, and I guess that I'm really candid with the people I talk to, and I you know, admit hand on heart that it is a form of therapy and you know, mental health maintenance for me to partake and to get to have great conversations with guys I admire. But is it your experience also, the helping field that you're in, do you find that very, very therapeutic? Do you feel drawn to help other people through what you've experienced?
Oh, 100%. You know, I think from that young age, you know, I look back when I was, you know, 13 years of age going through these panic attacks. At the same time, that's when I started to volunteer with people with special needs. It was just one way, you know, of having to deal with it. And eventually that's what brought me to where I am today in wanting to help people. You know, I think that's definitely something to do with my story. If I didn't have those experiences at such a young age, I don't think I would be where I am today, you know, running O'Hara Services. I don't know where I would be, but I wouldn't be, you know, I think it's definitely a big part of my story as to where I am as a person today, and no doubt a big part as to why you're running this show.
Oh, 1,000%, mate. So I guess that flows on to how would you describe your current relationship with your mental health? I quite like that question, actually. I think I've worded it well. How would you describe your current relationship with your mental health?
I would say, you know, and I've heard Corey and Jake both say, you do have your down days. There's, you know, there's no two ways about it. You're still going to have those days where you feel a little bit crap. But I feel like as a person, I'm more aware of my emotions and my mental health. So if I know I'm not okay, even during this whole COVID-19 bullshit, I've even been able to say to my partner, hey, I'm not feeling okay, can we go for a walk? Because I need that physical exercise. So, or she'll even ask me, how are you going? I go, pretty crap, can we go for a walk? Yep, how are you feeling? Great, I'm awesome now. It's just, you know, I know how to deal with it better, and I know that I'm a lot more aware of my mental health.
Yeah, man.
As an adult.
I can totally relate, and there's, it reminds me of a book actually, soapbox moment for me, but there's a book called The Happiness Trap by Russ Harris, and my big take out of where I am at now as I've matured a little bit, and that
that was, you know, you were harsh on yourself earlier about, you know, partying hard and being a bit alpha in your early 20s or whatever it may be. But, you know, that early adulthood, well, you know, it took me most of my 20s to work out that that wasn't going to lead to a happy life. I paid a pound and then some. I was a you know, a very spectacular train wreck. But I think one of the greatest robberies for young men is the world's become so civilized and so safe and everything else, particularly the Western world, that we're kind of robbed of an initiation process where, long story short, where we get to realize that life isn't that fucking easy, and that happiness is an aspect of the broader emotional spectrum and everything else is as well. And at times you will float between all of it, and just because you're not happy or even not happy for a period of time, that doesn't define you. That's not unhealthy necessarily. It's just a part of your emotional flow. I think, you know, making people think that that's something they need to avoid or run from is probably pretty unsafe and counterproductive.
Yeah, I was listening to that. That's just sort of, you know, I think you and Corey touched on it with, wasn't it, you know, 8th place ribbons. That's just sort of the world that we're growing up in at the moment. And, you know, people could debate whether it's right or wrong, but where is it leading us in the long run? And I think you guys really hit the nail on the head. I couldn't agree with you guys anymore. That, yeah, it's setting us up for failure in a lot of aspects.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And it's kind of almost been swept along for the journey, and something, as you know, I've been careful not to indulge in is any battle of the sexes with this. I think the world has got better for everyone, and I don't think men are in any way hard done by, on account of the fantastic advancements in the way we treat women and women having a greater sense of identity and being a part of the workforce and all of these things. But I think if anything, men have been too well looked after during that period, in that, you know, as the masculine aspect of the household, we've probably been a bit protected from realizing that life isn't all about driving fast cars and being happy and having the world at our feet, so to speak. For the third time, Lockie, what's something you're currently looking forward to or excited about, man?
Well, I've actually had a bit of time to think about it now. So immediately, I'm really looking forward to going back to day-to-day life, going to the gym, round one footy. But also really looking forward to, and it might sound a little bit silly, but my brother's wedding. Just having the family all together and celebrating something like that so beautiful. I'm really looking forward to that the more I think about it.
Has that been delayed as a result of what's going on, mate? Or was that already not yet, so to speak?
That was already sort of delayed. So hasn't. It's next year. Hopefully everything goes to plan and we can head over to Fiji for it. So
yeah, beautiful.
Should be good.
I'm not sure if it's just, you know, March and the weather that usually is March in Australia, but I must have 4 or 5 couples that I'm on great terms with, friends that are either I'm friends with both of the couple or one who have had to postpone their wedding. It's crazy how many people it's affected in that specific regard.
Yeah, I've seen it a fair bit. It must be heartbreaking. I can still see there's people that have gone ahead with it, which is great. You know, I guess it's an individual choice, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got a very dear friend in Perth whose thoughts and things I respect a lot, and we've stayed in touch once I've been back this side, even though we certainly weren't close to catching up when I was over there, and he's Serbian and his better half is Jewish, so you can imagine the sort of rigmarole that would be involved in a wedding. It wouldn't be a small event, and much to my surprise, admiration, whatever, I thought was ballsy, let's say. They've obviously postponed the ceremonial aspect of their wedding, but then they took their witnesses down to the registry and they did the legality of getting married on the day that was supposed to be their wedding anyway, which I thought was pretty beautiful.
Yeah, that's absolutely, that's just something for them, which is great. They've put everything else aside and done what's right for them. That's awesome.
Now, not short of an opinion like me, mate. So if you were talking to that young whippersnapper, 18-year-old Lockie Floyd, what's a piece of advice if you could streamline what you might tell that young fella?
Just do everything you want for you. Don't worry about anyone else, within reason, but make the decisions based on you. Don't do anything to please anyone else. Just those that, you know, just do it for yourself and no one else. Don't worry about trying to impress anyone. Just do what Lockie Floyd wants to do.
It's funny, maybe it's the people that are attracted to this project, and it's certainly the case with me, but from having been through a bit of shit and its relation to, you know, dealing with stuff that comes up thereafter, but certainly being candid about unideal times and about times and I haven't met the mark or whatever it may be, I was actually thinking about it a couple of times this week when people have asked me about how I'm doing and how I said I feel like that's been fueled by my candor and passion for this project. I feel like you'll agree with me that once you've been through some struggles with mental health or whatever it may be, it's a fantastic catalyst to just stop giving a fuck about what everyone thinks and to live your life on the basis of what makes you proud of the bloke in the mirror.
Oh, 100%. And Mum will always say the same thing. I wouldn't be the outgoing person I am now if it wasn't for what I've been through. It's sort of, yeah, it's a bit rough, but it's helped me be the person I am today as well. So, yeah, as crap as it was at the time, it's made me who I am. So, you know, it's built me to who I am today.
Love it, man. It's been an interesting one because we have a lot of banter at the best of times, but as you know, always end this by sort of opening the floor to either a bit of interview the interviewer or just letting you drive the conversation for us to sort of workshop an issue that you're going through or, you know, something in the space of mental health or men's mental health, man. So do you have a question or do you have a topic that you want us to end on?
It's going to be a pretty broad question, I guess. You know, the podcast is called Blokes Don't Talk, and you're sort of aiming around the stigma of why blokes don't talk, or you sort of touch on it. What are the main reasons do you think in society why blokes don't talk about their mental health in particular?
It's an interesting... as I tend to say at least once a fucking episode, I'm not a psychologist and whilst I do have some tertiary study experience in the field of psychology, I'm certainly not proficient. My thoughts on the topic would be at this stage, what I think is starting to be in my opinion is a combination of two-sided things. So one, that sense of identity that men have maybe lost of where every generation probably previous to yours and mine or maybe a little bit further back, men were still very much judged on action in being the protector, the provider, the hard worker, whatever it may be. So what I'm getting at there is having a less frequent opportunity to show our worth through action has meant that we've had to put on a bit of a front collectively and, you know... It gets a lot of slag, but really social media is a bit of a reflection of whatever society's heading towards anyway or however we're wanting to be. I think an aspect of it as well is the highlight reel, so to speak, that when we're fairly constantly interacting with people at a shallow level through their highlights, shall we say, seeing the best and most impressive and most exciting of what everyone's getting up to, particularly the guys in our life that we have time for or admire, it's hard to hang our hat on either currently being broken or having any sort of a history of not meeting the mark, of having, you know, fucked up here or there or even just being put through the ringers by life a little bit. So for me, it would be, you know, that tension point, a bit of fear, where even if we don't necessarily believe the highlight reel that we're being presented of other males in our life, stepping forward to present yourself as broken as still fairly counterintuitive, I guess, to the sort of polished persona that everyone's having to put out there. And as I started by saying, we're kind of robbed of an opportunity to circumnavigate that maybe by getting to show our worth regularly as males in previous generations were maybe afforded. What's your thoughts? Does any of that ring true to your experience, mate?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's, you know, we could go on for hours. That's what, it's a very broad question. I just wanted to get your take on your views, because I think you could ask 10 different people and you could get various different answers as to why people think blokes don't talk, you know. But definitely the fact that it doesn't seem like it's the regular norm as well is, you know, and that embarrassment or that fear of being judged, I guess. For me, you know, I look back as a 13, 14-year-old, well, I wouldn't tell anyone that, hey, leave me alone, I'm going through this shit time, because I feel like that would just give people another reason to judge me. Because mental health can be judged and perceived as, you know, I don't know how to word this properly, I guess, as such a negative thing, and you just don't want to be, it's not something that you want to be added on top of, you know. You've got these mental health issues, you don't want people to find that as another reason to sort of have a dig at you, I guess. So, yeah, I guess that's another reason why, I guess, people just don't talk.
No, it's very true, man. And I don't think it's out of a lack of compassion. I think it flows back to what we talked about earlier in the misconception that life is easy and that we should constantly be fairly happy. It's just not true of human experience across time, and even in our very sheltered today, I don't think it's, you know, it only takes something like this or a natural disaster or an illness in the family or someone to punch you in the face at a fucking pub for you to realise that you're just not necessarily the boss of everything, and that the broader experience of life isn't just about smelling the roses and being happy all the time.
Exactly. You gotta take on those, you know, real moments and notice that, okay, life can be shit. Like, it's not all easy going, you know. It's going to be tough, and it's how we I just love that saying, it's not what happens to us, it's how we react. You know, it used to be up on my wall all the time. I used to look at it every morning and every night. It's not what happens to me, it's how I react. And I guess that's when I reflect on my best period or my proudest moment, is I was reading that every day. So it was, you know, visualized in my head, and it was just sort of, it just, yeah, it was something that I had to do day in, day out. If something happened to me, you know, fuck it, doesn't matter. How I react to this is going to matter a lot more.
Do you follow, I think it's called Whiteboard Lessons, but it's Craig Harper's motivational sort of page on Instagram. Do you follow that at all?
No, I'll write that over to me. I'll definitely give it a follow.
Yeah, sure. I'll flick it to you, mate. He's a PT that become a life coach. He's got a podcast that's you know, fantastic. It's one of the highest rating podcasts in Australia in this sort of space. And he's very genuine, entirely natural and traditionally masculine, and gets away with any faux pas, I guess he says, because he's clearly so caring and not meaning in any way to be non-politically correct, I guess. But the reason I thought of it is I screen captured one of his posts on this Instagram feed that he has yesterday, and for me it's kind of the flip side of what you've just mentioned there about separating yourself from the world around you in terms of emotional motivation or demotivation. And it just says, personal transformation is about consistency of action amid inconsistency of motivation. So basically, you know, whatever's going on around you, someone else is in a shit mood or someone gets sick or the weather's pus, just has very little to do with you. It's not there specifically to derail you or offend you, and you shouldn't use it as an excuse to be a lesser version of yourself, shall we say.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that just the absolute truth right there? Yeah.
Well, I might leave it on that note, bro, and let you get on with your Friday night and spend some quality time with your lovely lady and little man and all that. But definitely look forward to touching base with you over the weekend and flicking this through for you to have a listen back to, and very much enjoyed having a catch up.
Awesome. Yeah, I absolutely loved having a chat, man. It's great.
Thank you so much, Locke. Really appreciate it, man. I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you on behalf of everyone for doing this, mate. You're an absolute legend.
Cheers, man. Thank you.
No worries.
Blokes, thanks again for tuning in. Really hope you got something out of that. Start having those conversations with your mates, with your family, with a mental health professional if you need to. There's absolutely no shame in it. If you want to reach out to us or follow along, we're on Facebook or Instagram under Blokes Don't Talk. And to listen, we're available on all your good podcast platforms. Share it with a mate. Even if you're not quite sure, worst he can do is tell you he's not that interested. Might come back to you in a month or two and have really got something out of it. Thanks again. Talk next week.